friends. Welcome back. It is 4 p.m. Central Time, and you're listening to my voice on the great GCN radio network, and that means it is now time for INN World Report Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. My name is Tom Kiley, and I will be your host for the next 1 hour here on GCN. And we come to you now every day, Monday through Friday, that is, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And again, welcome to the program. We have a great, great show lined up for you today, folks. One of my favorite guests to talk with, we've not had him on the Daily Show here on GCN, but he's been on INN many times before on the television and our evening program as well, Richard Gage, the founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So he will be joining me in about 10 minutes or so. So that's plenty of time for you to get on the horn and tell your friends who are interested in what really happened to the World Trade Center towers on 9/11 to tune into the program and to Building 7 here in New York. You know, it's surprising, friends, how many people don't know, still don't know, that it was three, not two buildings that totally collapsed on September 11th, 2001, just 1/2 mile south of where I'm sitting and talking to you from right now in Lower Manhattan. It was about 5:20 in the afternoon that a third building, Building 7, approximately one football field away from the Twin Towers, came down as well, without any damage, any kind of significant damage to the building. There was some exterior damage from debris that was falling down. Many other buildings had the same kind of damage closer to the towers, and then it's purported that some minor office fires started as a result of that. But that's it, and mysteriously that building came down as well. So if you're interested in that topic and you want to know the very latest on what Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth are up to, then get on the phone, call Aunt Tilly, call Uncle Joe, and tell them tune in. And they'll be getting the very latest with that incredible organization. And as I understand it, they're almost at the 1,000 member mark for Architects and Engineers who have signed on to their group. And that's very exciting. And Richard Gage always tells me that the number is actually always lagging a bit behind, because they have people writing in and saying that they want to join and want to come on board, and it usually takes them a while to clear through the list of people who are waiting to join their company to verify that they are in fact an architect or an engineer. So it's probably over 1,000 at this point, but they've been close for some time now. So we'll talk with Richard about that. He is also just back about a week or so now from a triumphal tour, I would say, of Asia. He was in Australia and New Zealand and Japan, and we're going to find out the very latest about that for those of you who may have been following him on 9/11 Blogger, for instance, or through the ae911truth.org website. Maybe you've seen some of the great successes that he's had. He's been in some premier newspapers and so forth in that part of the world, and he's had some great gatherings where he's made his presentation. And if you've ever seen Richard Gage's presentation live, you know his format. He asks how many people believe the official story about how the Twin Towers came down and Building 7 came down, with a show of hands. And then by the end of the program that he presents, he asks the question again, and invariably many of the people who initially may have been skeptical now either say they don't believe it or they have serious doubts. So we'll be finding out from Richard how things went. In the meanwhile, let's see, there's some other stories that we've been covering. I wanted to bring this one up to you, friends, because I think it's just very important and perhaps even somewhat heroic that Representative Jan Schakowsky, a member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, is preparing to introduce legislation aimed at ending the U.S. government's relationship with Blackwater and other armed contracting companies. I think that's very, very interesting because, you know, as we know, there's tons of problems associated with the outsourcing of what used to be jobs that were done by our own military. Now, a lot of the security work, for instance, at embassies used to be the job of the Marine Corps, for instance. And you've got this mercenary army now that is getting increasingly more powerful, increasingly more money, and apparently, it seems to me, increasingly more unanswerable to anybody. And so cheers to Jan Szarkowski for bringing it up. Let's see. I'm trying to find out. I think she's from Ohio. I'm not certain on that, but we'll have to look that up and get you her information. But in any case, you may want to contact your representative and say that you are in favor of Jan Szarkowski's Stop Outsourcing Security Act, the SOS Act. And I think it's a great idea. In fact, it's a good test for our republic. Let's see if we can stop things from the slippery slope that they've been sliding down. Let's see if we can get rid of this special Praetorian Guard, this special band of mercenaries, many of whom, by the way, as I'm told, are former special service personnel of, say, the Marines or the Army, the Navy SEALs, and so forth. So this is actually drawing people out of those positions where they can get paid a lot more money and are not having to worry about answering to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So I think it's quite interesting. I firmly believe that if a country cannot inspire its citizenry to fill those jobs in its military service, then it's very bad news. It's a very dangerous sign if instead the powers that be then go try to fill those jobs with money. And it's a famous quote. I don't know if it was George Washington, but one of the founders of our republic said that they hated to think, I'm paraphrasing now, that American citizens would become part of a permanent standing military just to make a buck. So, in any case, hats off to Jan Szarkowski. Meanwhile, Richard Gage will be with us shortly. I urge you to go to their site, ae911truth.org. They're always adding more information. There's a physicist, I believe he is with Scholars for 9/11 Truth, David Chandler, who just comes up some incredible videos, and they've got one prominently featured now on the front of their site, where he's, if you follow through the video, it's not good for radio to try to describe this, but if you follow through the video, you can actually see cutter charges going off and beams falling when the charges break their connection with the building. Very interesting. Another story that I think is worth bringing up to you, because we've had him on the program before, and there's a former Guantanamo guard, Brandon Neely, who has done a lot of thinking about what he was involved in at Guantanamo, and he is now in the process of, he's in England right now, and just the other day, a couple of days ago, he met up with two of the detainees that he supervised while he was a Guantanamo Bay guard in the U.S. military. And it's on, you can find a video of this. It's very, very interesting. If you go to informationclearinghouse.info, informationclearinghouse.info, and you scroll down a few articles down in the page, you'll see Gitmo Guard, Guantanamo Bay Guard meets British ex-prisoners. It's only a few minutes of video, but it is very, very powerful video. He expresses his regret and his sorrow for having done what he did, and to hear the response from these two young men in Britain is just amazing. It's uplifting, friends, to see this taking place. In any case, we'll be right back with Richard Gage after these messages.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
good friends. Welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. Now 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, right here on the great GCN radio network. 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And friends, I'd like to introduce our daily program now to one of my favorite guests, somebody who is just doing a great, great job. And I think provides an example that a lot of professionals can follow. I'd like to introduce you all now to Richard Gage, the founding architect of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Richard, welcome to our afternoon program here on INN.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here with you.
Richard, I'm sure that just about, well, the majority of our audience knows about you and what you're up to and so forth, but on the odd chance that there are some folks out there who don't, why don't we go through a little bit of a brief history to bring us up to the present on how it was that you became inspired to start this organization and then the path that it's taken you on since?
Yes. Well, I'm a member of the American Institute of Architects, and I've been an architect for well over 20 years, and worked on all kinds of different projects, including lots of steel-framed fireproofed buildings. 3.5 years ago, I was on my way to a construction meeting, and I heard David Ray Griffin on the radio, and he was talking about an alternative theory as to how these World Trade Center high-rises came down, and the fact that there were three of them. I thought there was only two of them. Turns out most architects and engineers know nothing about the third skyscraper to come down on 9/11, Building 7, and that's the one that comes in the afternoon. You know, it wasn't hit by an airplane. Comes straight down smoothly, symmetrically into its own footprint, just about, at free-fall acceleration for at least 100 feet of its drop. That's as fast as a brick drops off the top of the building. That means the structural columns had to have been removed and could only have been removed explosively. So we're not talking about fire anymore, and every architect and engineer who sees this building comes down understands that intuitively. We've all seen the hotels come down in Las Vegas. There's only one way to do that, and that's not with fire. So I began an effort to get at the truth, and it turns out the Twin Towers have a complete set of problems associated with them and their extreme explosiveness, lateral ejection of debris, two-thirds of free-fall acceleration through what was the path of greatest resistance. The thousands of tons of structural steel designed to support these buildings has just been had to have given away for this building to accelerate like that. In addition, the upper 15-story mass in the North Tower is completely destroyed. So it's not even available in the first 4 seconds. So it can't crush the rest of the building at any speed. So what we see is the rest of the building tearing itself apart, pulverizing 90,000 tons of concrete, hurling laterally 600 feet these 9-ton perimeter wall units at 50 to 70 miles per hour. This is an extremely explosive event requiring an immense amount of energy, much more so than the gravitational potential available in the building. So we have now 1,000, almost 1,000 architects. We've got three to go to get there. And these architects and engineers are staking their reputations, their credibility on the line, demanding a real investigation, not based on any conspiracy theory, but based on the evidence, science-based forensic evidence found at the crime scene and the eyewitness testimony. And it's very clear to them that this is these are a series of explosive demolitions, and that the implications, obviously, are that Al-Qaeda didn't have access to these, what turns out to be very high-tech explosives found in the dust, in the powder throughout lower Manhattan, and molten metal and iron microspheres. This is all very, very key evidence that has been covered up in the official reports of FEMA, the 9/11 Commission report, and the NIST report, which has come out most recently. So that's your basic overview.
Richard, you, like you say, you've got basically 1,000 architects and engineers who have stepped forward. Now, there's probably many more members or friends, but they may not be an architect or an engineer. Is that fair to say when we use the number 1,000?
Yeah, there's about 6,000 or 7,000 others who are of a range of reputations, credibilities, credentials.
So here's almost 1,000 architects and engineers, as you say, putting their reputation on the line, saying that this doesn't happen. And if I may speak for I'm going to speak for myself here. I'm not speaking for your organization. But if I was an architect or an engineer, I'd be a member as well, saying that I'm not stupid. I'm not an idiot. I don't make a building to fall down because of a fire. And I think, by the way, the proof in that pudding is that, as far as I know, there hasn't been any laws changed to correct this massive fault in the way we build buildings, apparently. But in any case, on the other side, I don't see any organization of architects and engineers standing up to defend the government's position. And you guys have been at it long enough. There should be, if there doesn't seem to be much enthusiasm to defend the government's position. What's your observation on that?
Well, no. There's a couple of dozen engineers and architects that are supporting the official story, and we have been unable to get any of them to debate us about it, so that we can, who will defend it publicly, in other words. Although we did finally find an explosives expert in Canada who would debate us, and we had a very interesting debate. I encourage your listeners to listen to it. It's been condensed without commercials to just over an hour. And this is with Ron Craig, on Richard Syrett's show called The Conspiracy Show. And it was a very interesting debate where we were able to answer some of the more unusual arguments supporting the official story. He's less familiar with some of the evidence that we were presenting, unfortunately, and that came out in the debate. But we're getting him up to speed on the evidence for iron microspheres found in the dust, for instance, as documented by USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, and also R.J. Lee, and then these chips found in all of the dust samples by different groups of scientists that find very high-tech nanothermite, which is an incendiary that's been enhanced with nanotechnology.
Well, I'm going to ask you about that when we come back from the break. Friends, we're speaking with Richard Gage, founding architect of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. By the way, if you're interested, their website is ae911truth.org. We'll be right back with Richard after these messages. This is Tom Kiley. We bring you INN War Report Radio here on the Great GCN Radio Network 5 days a week now, Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And friends, INN, we've been at it for about 9 years on television, on radio, and we've had a lot of great guests over the years. And Richard Gage is somebody that we've had on a number of times over the years now, and I'm really happy to bring him to our afternoon program now on GCN. Richard, we were talking before the break about some of the evidence of explosives that were found in the dust. You mentioned iron microspheres. You mentioned thermite, nanothermite chips. Can we just talk about that briefly in case somebody doesn't understand the significance, say, of the iron microspheres?
Well, sure. First of all, USGS documents that there were numerous microspheres that are made of iron in all of the dust, lower Manhattan, and that they found 1% of the contents of the dust was these very, very curious and unexplained previously molten iron microspheres. It's documented that they don't get spherical unless they're airborne after some sort of atomization process, like when you spray a spray bottle into the air. It's atomized.
Well, when you hurl a liquid through the air, it's natural for it to form into a sphere, right? Whether it's hot liquid or cold liquid or anything, just gravity acts on it and it forms a sphere. This is the way we used to make shot in the old days when we'd melt lead and they'd drop it down a shot tower into a pool of water below.
It's not the gravity that makes it into a sphere, though. It's the surface tension. And so what gravity does is it pulls it to the Earth along with all the other dust, and this is how they get mixed in.
Okay.
R.J. Lee comes along later and documents that on top of the Deutsche Bank building, these spherical contents are up to 6% of the amount of the dust that fell in that building. They document that these are primarily iron. Now, how can... This is not melted steel, by the way. This is iron. Where does molten iron come from? Well, one rational explanation is in alignment with the characteristics of the way the buildings came down with their extreme explosiveness. One explanation is that thermite. So it's a plausible hypothesis that needs to and has been looked at. Thermite is an incendiary used to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. It produces liquid molten iron as its byproduct. So if we had thousands of some sort of cutter charge or other form of thermite in the building going off under explosive conditions, maybe along with explosives, it would atomize that iron. So this is a rational, reasonable explanation for how that iron got there. What is also found, though, at the base of all three buildings is large pools of molten metal, or molten steel, as the first responders called it. Turns out it's molten iron. Dr. Stephen Jones, a physicist from Brigham Young University formerly, documents that these previously molten chunks, they call them meteorites, several ton chunks of previously molten substance. He analyzes it, and it's iron. It's not molten steel. It's not molten aluminum from a jet plane or something. It is indeed molten iron. So this is another corroboration. Indeed, then he found in, and others, in these different samplings that were collected by various individuals sent to Dr. Jones for analysis, he finds in each of them these small chips. They're red on one side, gray on the other. The red side is composed, the smallest chip is about a 16th of an inch long, or that is to say the largest chip. But within that chip, there are particles that are 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. These are nanoscale particles. These particle sizes are manufactured only in the most sophisticated laboratories. We have particles of iron oxide, rhomboidal in shape, perfectly uniform, 40 nanometers across, in combination with particles of aluminum. These are wafers, 40 nanometers thick, hexagonal in shape, up to 400 or 500 nanometers long. This aluminum and iron, which are the basic constituents of thermite, by the way, are in perfect proportion to each other in order to make up thermite, the material thermite, within this small, every one of these small chips. So there's
Richard, can I ask you a question about that? Are these particles that you're referring to? Because typically, as I understand it, thermite is just you scoop a powder of aluminum oxide, you scoop some powder of iron oxide, you mix it together. But this is these chips. It sounds like these particles are suspended in something. Are they suspended in some sort of other material?
They're mixed and laid on a bed of silica, which
okay.
is an organic material, which would enhance the opportunity for an incendiary or to become or activate an explosive. With the organic material, it can do pressure volume work. So this is something that's being discussed by scientists who understand these things a whole lot more than me. The point is that it shouldn't be there in the dust. And now that it has been found, and by the way, should have been found by NIST, because it turns out that the individuals brought in by the Bush administration to take over the NIST investigation were themselves, in fact, the experts in nanothermite technology. They should have been.
Doesn't get much more incestuous than that, does it?
It doesn't seem to. So NIST has no excuse for not looking for or examining evidence of controlled demolition, given the behavior of the buildings, given the molten metal, given the iron spheres, given the fact that explosives were found, these high-tech explosives were found in all the dust samples.
And this is an abundance of references as well. You know, they've got the high temperatures, they've got the molten iron, both in the basement of the buildings and being clearly being hurled through the air, the evidence of it in the dust. You see it actually running out of the North Tower moments before the South Tower, rather, moments before it collapses. Now there's these chips and so forth. So there's an abundance of evidence of this stuff, and yet they don't refer to it. It takes outsiders to do so. And by the way, the corporate media trying to bend over backwards to talk away this stuff. You know, the BBC crew that had interviewed you, even I spoke with them, and they're the BBC, I guess, feels guilty about Building 7, and they try to explain these iron microspheres by saying, well, you know, perhaps this came from the rescue torches of the welding torches of the rescuers that you know, as they were cutting through the steel, it caused these little, you know, iron microspheres to go flying off. And I said, you got to be kidding me. This is ridiculous. This stuff clearly was all over Manhattan way before any rescue workers got there, and it was far away. So, in any case.
True. They were found. One sample was collected on the Brooklyn Bridge 10 to 20 minutes after the collapse of the North Tower. There's no cleanup work going on 10 to 20 minutes.
And that's a pretty powerful welding torch that can hurl those balls a half a mile away and through time as well. Anyway, we're speaking with Richard Gage, and we're talking about the BBC's magic tiny balls theory. And we'll be back with him right after these words. America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified neocon-free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to innworldreport.net.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Good friends, welcome back. Coming down the home stretch on a great program here. For the first time on our afternoon show, our afternoon radio show, I should say. He's been many times on the television and the evening radio program for INN War Report. We've got Richard Gage. Richard, is it AAE, the proper way to say it?
AIA, American Institute of Architects.
Sorry about that. AIA. I want to be clear about that, that Richard is in fact an architect and founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Richard, can we talk a little bit about this recent trip that you just had in Asia? I know I was following it on your website, ae911truth.org, and also on 9/11 Blogger. And it was just like one incredible news report after another. You were in New Zealand. You were in the papers there. You were on radio and television there in Australia and Japan. How did that go? Did you gain some new supporters while you were there?
Yeah, indeed. At one event in New Zealand, we had 730 people show up. The auditorium held only 320. So they made an overflow space for 300, and we still had to turn over 110 people away. And that's what we like to see. More often than not, there's spaces left available in these seats. And we were delighted. And the reason we were able to get so many is because we did have a large response to a radio talk show, very popular, one of the most popular in the country, Kim Hill Show. And her goal was to try to tear us apart, limb from limb, so to speak, on the radio. And I think we held our own quite well, and she had hundreds of people emailing and calling in, lambasting her for treating us so violently. It was quite interesting. We also appeared in New Zealand on the equivalent, I guess you would say, of their 60 Minutes TV program. And got a lot of response from that as well. So mainstream radio and TV coverage in New Zealand. And we just yesterday in Japan had a multi-page article, a very positive article, in what's the equivalent of Time magazine for them. National, 8 million readership magazine. And it was very positive about our tour, about what architects and engineers are about, and which is, by the way, a new investigation into all three of these World Trade Center high-rises, the destruction of them. So we're very pleased. Australia wasn't too much different, although from the official media, mainstream media has been very difficult in Australia. But in each of these countries, there is the most hard-working group of volunteers. I'm telling you, 20 to 30 people in each city, and 14 cities all together we spoke in, came together to make this happen. And John Bursell in Australia, a tireless worker for 9/11 Truth, and Helen Waddington and Roger Morris in New Zealand have volunteers all over that country, and Yumi Kikuchi in Japan. Up to 30 or 40 or 50 people would be showing up to assist her wherever we went in these seven cities in Japan. It was extraordinary.
When you say, Richard, volunteers, and I want to get next into, you know, what people can do, because I think it's very important. Now you're talking about people who are rolling their sleeves up, and maybe they're not architects and engineers like you are and your brethren and sister in there, but they're rolling their sleeves up and getting involved. What kind of are they in an organization, or are these just individuals who came together?
Yeah, no, they're just individuals who would consider themselves in the 9/11 Truth movement, unorganized in some cases, organized around the belief that we can't let any of their governments, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, or here in the U.S., get away with lies to our people about how these 2,744 victims were murdered. We're talking about some sort of treason, really, because Al-Qaeda didn't have access to these sophisticated materials or to these buildings. So in the case of Japan, we have Senator Fujita, who brought eight members of parliament to a room, and we were able to give this one-hour presentation to all of them at once. And each of them, in turn, stood up and spoke very, very shocking, expressing how shocked they were to hear this, and that it rang true. And one of them stood up and said, "I'm proud to join you," the lead senator in Japan. They call them counselors of their diet, which is their Congress, basically. It was extraordinary to have that level of support from Japanese government members. That is unprecedented for the 9/11 Truth Movement.
So these volunteers basically found out through 9/11 architects and engineers announcing this. I guess there's news on the bloggers. What about We Are Change? They are also heavily involved. Isn't that a way for people to get involved too?
Oh yeah, here in the U.S. we have groups in every major metropolitan area, local chapters, if you will, of We Are Change. They're very loosely affiliated with each other, but they're all dedicated to being visible, chiefly out in the streets, carrying the banners. Particularly, we give them our banners to carry, which says hundreds of architects and engineers calling for a new 9/11 investigation. They are giving out literature in the streets, creating visibility. This is where a lot of Americans only hear about the 9/11 Truth Movement. It's out in the streets on the 11th of every month. Members of Truth Action are out there. And we give them our brochures, our DVDs to hand out as well. And they are contacting members of Congress and academicians and architects and engineers all over the country. It's a grassroots movement. It's incredible to see millions across the country waking up to this nightmare of what somebody on the inside has put together and blamed on these foreign countries. And we've invaded Afghanistan and Iraq. It is breaking our treasury, and it's killed a million more people. It's incredible, and the whole thing goes back to 9/11. We pull the rug out from under 9/11, and we expose everything that's happened since, including the loss of our rights. We can now be put in jail and be called forever, just because they're calling us a terrorist. We've lost some very basic rights that the Constitution had provided us.
And they're even flirting with calling you a terrorist, aren't they? I remember that House resolution that, was promulgating.
Senator Dean Harmon. Yeah.
Harmon, yeah. Right, in California, where they're talking about homegrown terrorism and internet groups, and mixed into with all these jihadi groups on the web was your group. Whatever happened with that?
Well, we've written a letter citing why and demanding an explanation and a retraction of Mark Weitzman of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, who was coached by the RAND Corporation, specializing in counterterrorism, giving a presentation to the Subcommittee on Homegrown Homeland Security on homegrown terrorism. And there we were in the slideshow, sandwiched between Islamic jihadists. Just the little architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. Just our mission is to expose the truth about the collapses, the destruction of these buildings. So, yeah, nothing's happened since. Yeah.
No apology, or at least an acknowledgement that it was some sort of mistake? Just a silence?
No. Yeah, just silence on that front. But we're making a lot of waves in other places.
We had you on the radio when that first came out, because Richard, I think that there's no question that the plotters of 9/11 seem to have lots and lots of friends in high places, particularly in the media, and it's outlets like this one that get the word out about the truth about 9/11, and particularly about people like you. And I think we're going to become a target, so people have to be on guard. Anyway, Richard.
So I encourage people to come to the website, ae911truth.org, and get the DVD. Look at it. Share it with friends.
Absolutely. As Richard says, it's an incredible presentation, the DVD. I've presented it to people and have turned them around on 9/11 Truth. Richard, Godspeed. Thank you very much, and we'll have you back on in the future when more things develop. Thank you. All right, friends. That was Richard Gage, AIE, and founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. We will be back tomorrow talking about the banksters and all these crazy bonuses that they're getting. See you tomorrow.